Well, good evening, everyone. It's nice to see you out tonight as we continue on in our study of the doctrine of heaven. We're going to cover some interesting things tonight. Before we begin our study, let's look to the Lord in prayer. Our Father, we thank you for your precious word, and we thank you for your people who are out in the middle of the week to study it, to have their minds reflect upon things you've revealed in Scripture. And I pray that as we would see things and we would understand things, that our faith would be solid and stable as we look forward to the glorious moment when we have the privilege of actually going to the place we're learning about in your Word. I pray that you would bless our time tonight. In Jesus' name, amen. Last night, the President of the United States gave a speech to Congress. In that speech, he paid tribute to a fallen Navy SEAL, Ryan Owens. Ryan had lost his life getting valuable information to defend the United States. And when his wife was introduced, it was very, very emotional. Frankly, I was bawling like a baby watching that thing. But the president said something interesting. He said, Ryan is looking down right now. Is he? Does that square with the scriptures? Let's assume that Ryan was a believer in Jesus Christ. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He's a believer in Jesus Christ. He's in heaven. Was he watching what was going on in Washington last night? Actually, we're going to address that at another study. I just wanted to whet your appetite with that going into the night study. But there is a verse tucked away that I'm not going to tell you where it is, except it's in the book of Job. And it might give you some insight into answering that question. And you've got a couple of weeks, because I won't be here next Wednesday. We'll be here 2 weeks from tonight. So you've got a couple of weeks to kind of look at that. That's one of the questions we are going to take up in the course of this study. What do people actually know who are already in heaven? So for those of you that have had your curiosity whetted, you'll have to wait and see. Now, what we've been studying are the introductory matters pertaining to the doctrine, and the introductory matters pertaining to the doctrine concern names. God uses words, nouns, to describe heaven. One of them is heaven. And we saw last time in our study that particular word refers to the third heaven, which is the place where God's home resides. It's most often used in that context. Another noun that was used was the noun paradise. Paradise is a noun that is used that describes a beautiful, beautiful, majestic, park-like place. Jesus, when he was talking to that thief on the cross, who just simply said, Lord, would you remember me when you come into your kingdom? Jesus said, today you'll be with me in paradise. And by choosing that word, the thief would have thought, you know, I'm going to go to this beautiful place today. And that's what would have gone through his mind when he would have heard that. Now, another place that's critical for us to get a handle on in doctrine is the third word that's often used in regard to where people go when they leave this world. And that's the noun Sheol. S-H-E-O-L, Sheol. This is a very, very important word. Now, the first thing that I want you to know about Sheol, because this is something that sometimes people miss, is that Sheol is not always the equivalent of hell. So when you're reading the Bible and you read that someone went to Sheol, or there's the threat of going to Sheol, a lot of people think, oh, that means they went to hell. It doesn't necessarily mean that. Hell refers to a place of future punishment. Sheol is an Old Testament term that referred to a specific spot where people died in the Old Testament economy. Now, the King James Version translates the word hell 31 times. I think that's where some of the problem comes. They translate the word Sheol by the noun grave 31 times and pit 3 times. But the actual word Sheol is a word that refers to a hollow subterranean place of post-mortem existence. In other words, when a person died in the Old Testament economy, they went to this place, and it was a place for both the believer and unbeliever. It apparently is it's not heaven. Heaven can't be opened up until Jesus Christ goes to that cross. I mean, you can't rip that veil and send some sinner on earth into the presence of a holy God until he dies on that cross. So where did people go who died prior to him doing that? And of course, that's where Sheol comes into play. And apparently in this place of Sheol, which was a subterranean place, you have an upper chamber and you have a lower chamber. The upper chamber, as I understand it, and we'll certainly look at some things tonight, is the place where of comfort, given the term Abraham's bosom, where Old Testament believers went when they died. And the lower place was a place of torment. Now, I want to just have you turn to Proverbs chapter 9 for just a moment. Proverbs chapter 9. And I want to have you look at verse 18. Now, this is in a context of a woman who's leading people astray. That's the context of all of this. And it's the young man who's being led astray. And in verse 18 of Proverbs 9, we read, "He does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of Sheol." I want you to notice that phrase, depths of Sheol. Because that particular phrase tells us that there are different levels in Sheol. There's a depth level, and you don't want to, an Old Testament person didn't want to be in the depth level. You wanted to be in the upper level. Now, we know that it's true that wicked people who died did go to this place. Go to Psalm 9, just back up to Psalm chapter 9. And notice verse 17. Psalm 9, verse 17. "The wicked will return to Sheol, even all the nations who forget God." We're talking about wicked people going to this Sheol, this subterranean place, for punishment. That's where wicked people would go. So we know that this was a place where wicked people went, but so did the righteous. Because when you go to Genesis 37:35, we read in Genesis 37:35, "Then all his sons and all his daughters arose to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted, and he said, 'Surely I will go down to Sheol in the morning for my sons.' So his father wept for him." Sheol was the place where Jacob anticipated he would go when he died. So Sheol was this place where you had wicked people go. Jacob was a tremendous believer, and he anticipated, "That's where I'm going to go." So what you have in Sheol is a place comprised of two chambers in the Old Testament economy. One chamber was a place of comfort. That's we'll look at that when the rich man and Lazarus die. The rich man, as you know, goes to this place of torment, and Lazarus is in this place of comfort. And obviously, you have these areas that are in close proximity to each other because one could look across and see the other and recognize the other. And so what we would learn from this is that this is a place where people in the Old Testament economy went. Also, let's go over to Numbers chapter 16, if you would. Numbers chapter 16. And I want to point out a couple of verses here. Numbers 16 and verse 30, we read, "But if the Lord brings about an entirely new thing, and the ground opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that is theirs, and they descend alive into Sheol." Descend. So you're not ascending to heaven, you're descending into Sheol. "Then you will understand these men have spurned the Lord." Drop down to verse 33. "So they and all that belonged to them went down alive to Sheol." So Sheol was a place where you descend. You do not ascend when you die. Also, we learn from verse 33, it's a place where God could actually send a person while they were alive. He could literally just throw them into this place of Sheol. It was a place that was a living place. I mean, it was a place where people actually went and they actually existed. Now let's go to 1 Samuel chapter 2. 1 Samuel chapter 2. We read in verse 6, "The Lord kills and makes alive. He brings down to Sheol and raises up. God is the one who determines when a person dies and goes down to Sheol." Hannah is praying this as a praise song. She realizes that the Lord is the one who controls who goes into this place and who would come out of this place. I mean, that's what the prayer is. When you go to 2 Samuel 21, and not the verse I want, so I'm not sure what verse I want there. I'll find it. I'll correct that and come back next time with a correction on that reference. But if we compare that with Psalm 18 and Psalm 116, David viewed Sheol as the place where he would go when he died. Go to 1 Kings chapter 2. 1 Kings chapter 2. We read in verse 6, David talking to Solomon. Of 1 Kings chapter 2 verse 6, so act according to your wisdom. Do not let his gray hair go down to Sheol in peace. Verse 9, now therefore do not let him go unpunished, for you are a wise man, and you will know what you ought to do to him, and you will bring his gray hair down to Sheol with blood. This was a place where people who had gray hair would go when they died. I mean, that's what it said there. If we go to Job, and I'm just going to highlight some of these things. I'm not going to turn to all of these references, but we will go to Job chapter 10. Job chapter 10. By the way, I'm not going to give away the verse that. So some of you sneaky people out there are probably thinking he's going to reveal it. I'm not. Job chapter 10, verse 21. Before I go, I shall not return to the land of darkness and deep shadow, the land of utter gloom, as darkness itself, or deep shadow without order, which shines as darkness. And he's talking here about going to this place. Flip over in Job to chapter 17, verse 16. Chapter 17, verse 16. Will it go down with me to Sheol? Shall we together go down into the dust? So Job believed that this was a land that was deep and dark. It was a place where one went when one would die. And Job viewed it as a place where he would go when he died. I mean, that's where Job anticipated going when he died. Job was the most righteous man on the face of the earth. So obviously, this is certainly not a place of torment. Sheol was a place where sinners go, not those who are righteous. Sheol was a place of departed spirits who tremble and who are seen by God. Or according to Psalm 6:5, it was a place where doing a work for God had ceased. I do want to show you that one. Psalm chapter 6 and verse 5, if you'd go there, please. And this is critical to us even making an application to the grace age. For there is no mention of you in death in Sheol. Who will give you thanks? Now, the point of this is, once you've gone to this place, your opportunity to do a work for the Lord has ceased. There's no more opportunity to offer public witness. There's no more opportunity to offer public thanksgiving or praise. There's no more opportunity, once a person goes to this place or leaves this earth, to lay up any more treasures in heaven. There's no more opportunity. There are no more options for a person to lay up anything other than what they have when they go into eternity. So that puts an end to the possibility of doing things that could earn more rewards or lay up treasures in heaven. And you know, those thinking of suicide ought to think very seriously about that, because they ought to stop and consider this critical fact. If my life ends now, tonight, I have no further opportunity to do anything that could be praiseworthy for the Lord. Nothing. I end it tonight. And that is something that we need to think about, because when we do leave this earth, the work that we've done stops. There's no more opportunity to, as it were, work and earn any more rewards. We know from Psalm 9:17 that Sheol's a place where the wicked go. We know from Psalm 31:17, Sheol's a place where enemies of God are silenced. We know from Proverbs 9:18 that Sheol houses those that are dead, and apparently there are different depth levels. We know from Ecclesiastes 9:10 is Sheol is a place where work has ceased. It's like an eternal retirement village, or as Strong said, it's a subterranean retreat for the believer. Now, today, as we're talking about our doctrine of heaven, we know that this side of the cross, when the believer leaves, they go to heaven. But this is the Old Testament economy. It's a place where Old Testament believers went. In Isaiah 5:14, the space of Sheol is unlimited. It can house an immeasurable numbers of people. In Isaiah 14:9, the location of Sheol is below, and the inhabitants of Sheol are spirits. So there's spirits of people that are actually in Sheol. We know from Isaiah 38:10 that it is said to have entrance gates. It's a place that houses those who've left the land of the living and the inhabitants of the world. So people who left the land of the living went to this place of Sheol. In Isaiah 38:18, Sheol is a place one goes at death. It's a place where one cannot see any more demonstrations of God's faithfulness. I mean, we get to by faith see many demonstrations of God's faithfulness as we live our life here. Once we leave this earth, there's no more of that, because then we're seeing eternity and what's in eternity. And we'll get into what we actually will see and what we can learn and grow at future studies. In Ezekiel 31, Sheol is a real place that houses the dead. It's located beneath the earth. Apparently, it has a part to it that offers comfort in a Garden of Eden type existence, and that's the part that we would call paradise. Then in Ezekiel 32, Sheol is a place where there is communication between those that are there. Now, when do the people who are in Sheol, who were the believers, get out of there? When do they get out of there and then have their, as it were, day to come out of Sheol, where they are presently now being comforted and enjoying whatever it is they're enjoying while they're there? Well, the answer to that is in Daniel 12, 1-2 at the end of the tribulation. In Daniel 12, 1-2, let's go over there. This is a specific resurrection of Old Testament Israel. Most of the people who are in Israel, not all, but most are Jewish, that are in Abraham's bosom. It would stand a reason, since it's Abraham's name, that most of the people in there would be Jewish. Most of those who went to Sheol in the Old Testament economy are Jewish. And you'll notice in Daniel 12, 1-2, now, at that time, Michael, the great prince who stands guard over the sons of your people, and that's Israel, will arise, and there will be a time of distress such as never occurred since there was a nation until that time. And at that time, your people, everyone who is found written in the book, will be rescued. Many of those who sleep in the dust of the ground will awake, these to everlasting life. There's going to be a specific resurrection of the believers who are in Sheol at the end of the time of wrath, the likes of which has never occurred before on the face of the earth. That time of wrath, of course, is the tribulation. It will be 3.5 years of horrible wrath headed by the Antichrist. At the end of that, all of those Old Testament saints who were in this place of comfort will be raised up, and they will be raised up to inherit this remarkable kingdom that they've been longing for ever since it was promised to them in the book of Genesis. They're looking to inherit all that land, and they're going to be raised up to inherit that land. Now, what about the other ones? You'll notice verse 2 of Daniel 12. But the others, now we're talking here about those that were not believers. They're in Sheol in the torment side. The others to disgrace and everlasting contempt. The others are not going to be raised at this time. They'll be raised at another resurrection to face the great white throne judgment. And at that time of facing the great white throne judgment, which is described in the book of Revelation, they will ultimately face Jesus Christ one time before they will be cast into the eternal lake of fire. So, where did believers of the Old Testament go? They went to Sheol. Whenever you see the word Sheol, doesn't mean automatically hell or a hellish place. It can be a reference to a place where Old Testament believers went, and as I understand it, they still reside in this place until that resurrection. Now, the fourth word that is connected to eternal things is the noun Hades, and this is a New Testament word that describes a place of afterlife punishment. And oftentimes, in the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation of the Old Testament, when the writers or the translators realized that this part of Sheol is the place of punishment, they'd actually use the noun Hades. For example, in Isaiah 38:18, let's just go over to Isaiah 38:18. In Isaiah 38:18, For Sheol cannot thank you, depth cannot praise you, those who go down to the pit cannot hope for your faithfulness. The word that the Septuagint uses there is Hades. Those that is talking about people that are going to this place, and it does use the noun Hades. This word is used 10 times in the New Testament, and it can be viewed, Hades, in a similar way as Sheol can be. However, the emphasis of Hades is on the punishment side of things. So sometimes that noun Sheol was replaced by the noun Hades, and whenever that noun was used, it meant a place where an unbeliever went to experience torment. And that's not the everlasting lake of fire, by the way. That's just the torment that they experienced before their final sentence to the everlasting lake of fire, which is a place of terrible torment. A fifth word that's used is the noun Abaddon, A-B-A-D-D-O-N. That's a word that has to do with a place of destruction. Apparently there's an angel who has the same name in charge of this place. The sixth word connected to where people went is Abraham's bosom. We've already pretty much discussed that. Abraham's bosom is a place of comfort in close proximity to Hades, a place of torment. There's a seventh word used. It's the noun Tartaros. I'm just giving you all the nouns used for where people go when they die. Tartaros. T-A-R-T-A-R-O-S. Peter uses that word in 2 Peter 2. It's a word that refers to the abode of the damned. It's synonymous with being cast into hell. This word is only used once in the New Testament. It described a place where wicked people go when they die. There's the eighth word used. It's the noun Gehenna. Gehenna is a place located outside of Jerusalem. It was known for burning garbage and bodies of criminals. It became a term used as a future place of punishment that would include burning fire. And Jesus actually used the word that way in Matthew when he warns that if you don't believe in him, you will go to this place, Gehenna. The ninth word that's used is the noun hell. The word hell is the old English word that first surfaced around 8725. It's the word used to describe a place of eternal fire. Actually, the Bible, the word hell is either the word Sheol, Hades, Gehenna, or Tartaros. And most of the time, the New American Standard Bible will translate the word just as it is. But sometimes, on rare occasions, it will use the noun hell, but that's where the noun came from. And then the final word is the word lake of fire, and that's the specific final place of eternal torment where unbelievers die. So I've given you there the main words that are used to describe places where people go when they die. Now, what do we learn from John 14, 2-3? So let's go to John 14, 2-3. He says in verse 1, "Do not let your heart be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you, for I go to prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also." If there's one person who knows a lot about heaven, it's Jesus Christ. He told his disciples that he was sent to earth from heaven. He said that he had previously lived in heaven, and he actually prayed that his family would have the privilege of going to heaven and seeing him in all of his glory. It was a prayer request he made, that his family would actually, he said, "Father, I want you to bring them where we live, and I want you to display my glory so they can see it." He said that he died so we could go to heaven. Then we know when he arose, he ascended back up into heaven. So my point of this is whatever Jesus Christ says about heaven is going to be something that's worthy of careful analysis. And in John 14, Jesus Christ, in these two verses, reveals some very critical information about heaven. And of course, what makes this even more weighty is he's communicating these things about heaven to some very depressed disciples because they knew he was about to die. Now, there are three specific words that Jesus uses to describe heaven. This is important because they're realizing he's going to die, so he's choosing his words carefully here. The first word he uses to describe it is he describes it as his father's house. He describes it as his father's house. He says in verse 2, in my father's house. Now that noun house, oikia, typically speaks, if you just track the word, of a place where a family lives. It's a place where a family resides. You understand house because you have a house. You know exactly what the word means. G. Abbott Smith says the word refers to an actual piece of property and the household that lives there. Now, what you can't deny is that when Jesus is talking about this heaven, he's talking about it as being a real literal place where God lives. He calls it God's house. And as we mentioned in our preliminary studies, he taught his disciples to say, our Father who art in heaven. So he calls it his Father's house. Secondly, he identifies heaven as having multiple dwelling places. He says in verse 2, in my Father's house are many dwelling places. Now, the actual word, and I'm a person who's very serious about actual words that are used in the Bible. The actual word that he chooses to use here, monai, dwelling places, is one that refers to a real place where people live. Now, you can't argue this point. This is the word he uses here. Real place where people live. In fact, the verb from which this noun is derived, meno, emphasizes that this is a particular place where people remain. This is a place where people continually abide and live. And what he says is, there are multiple dwelling places where people live at this place in heaven. Multiple places. And I would understand this to mean there are many, many homes. Magnificent. Magnificent homes. Magnificent mansions. Probably palatial palaces that have been specifically designed by Jesus Christ for his people. He wants his disciples to know in heaven, it's my Father's house and there are multiple dwelling places there. Then he says it is a place. He says in verse 2, in my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you, for I go to prepare a place for you. If I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. Now that word place that is used here and again in verse 3, you cannot possibly conjure up in your mind some type of metaphorical, hypothetical principle. This is an actual location. When he uses that noun place, he's using that word to refer to a specific place, a specific place that is a space of occupancy. And I can prove that by just tracking the word. Back up to John chapter 6. Jesus said, have the people sit down. Now there was much grass, and here's our noun, in the place. We're talking about a real place, aren't we not? A real place where people would sit down. That's the noun place. It's the same noun that's being used in chapter 14. I want to show you one more, and that's over to Acts chapter 12. Acts chapter 12. Now in Acts chapter 12, what is happening here is that Peter is being miraculously taken by an angel out of prison. And what happens in verse 12 is, and when he realized this, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, who was also called Mark, where they were gathered together and were praying. Now drop down to verse 17. But motioning to them with his hand to be silent, he described to them how the Lord had led him out of prison. And he said, report these things to James and the brethren. Then he left and went to another place. That's the same noun place. Now, you're not talking here about make-believe stuff. You're talking about very real places in space. You're talking about real specific locations. So when Jesus, back in John chapter 14, uses those words to describe heaven, I'm going to prepare a place for you, a place, he's not talking here about some metaphorical state of being. He's using language to describe heaven as being a very real literal place, a very real literal location. and that is clearly developed by any objective analysis of the literal words that are used by the Lord. E.M. Bounds said, heaven is not just a name, it's a tangible state with local inhabitants. And now when Jesus is talking here in John to these hurting apostles, shortly before he dies, he communicated this idea to them. Here's what could keep their heart from being troubled. I mean, this is what could actually bring their heart out of trouble when they're facing the death of a loved one. I want you to know, heaven is a real place where God lives. I want you to know that when a person goes there, there are lots of dwelling places. Each has their own. I also want you to know it is a very real place, and that's where people are going to live. Now, I would assume, just based on what we know about God in the Scriptures, that the place that he would prepare for any of his people will be beyond their wildest expectations. That's what I would assume about God. You can conjure up the kind of place you think you might get. I don't even think you can put it in your mind. I would suggest that this place that will be a real place that will exist in heaven, that has been prepared for the people of God, will be tailored to them, and it will be far more than what they could have ever dreamed. It'll be far more than what they could have ever deserved. It'll be an amazing place to see in this paradise, which is this beautiful, gorgeous place of existence. All we have to go on are the words that God chooses to reveal in his word, and those are the words. Well, our time is long gone tonight. We have a lot of interesting things we're going to discuss. We'll pick it up here 2 weeks from tonight.